The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to We the People Radio on another sunny Sunday afternoon.
Welcome.
Unless you live anywhere but California.
Yeah, California, we're mandated to have sunshine 320 days a year.
Yes.
We've had our rain for the season.
Nuttiness, total nuttiness. So, today we're talking about the health care bill. We haven't been really, I don't know, we've kind of let it slide for a while.
It's not going away, but it might go away.
I know. Yeah. We're creeping up on the going away part.
Yep, we're creeping up.
And then second hour, we have Patrick Wood back with us. He is going to – we just ran out of time last week about how we could fix the technocracy problem. So he has come back on graciously this week to spend another hour and we can figure out what to do. But we have Dr. Jason Fodeman with us this morning. If you want to join us on the chat room, we take questions through there. You can call us or you can chat with us. If you want to jump on the chat room, it's wethepeopleradio.us and click on this week or the tab on the top. Hold on. What is today? The 25th. It says January 25th. Either way you go, you'll see a bar there that says click here to listen and chat live. Great way to do it. And if you have to go somewhere and you really want to catch the show, come back to the page at about 2:30 and we'll have the archive up. So phone number, before we forget, is 530-605-4567. You're joining Aaron.
And Bill.
And Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Good afternoon, Aaron and Bob and Bill.
Aaron and Bob.
Yeah, we're past the good Bill. Morning part. At least we're not doing that anymore. Yeah.
Or at least I got afternoon right.
Yeah.
All right.
You did good.
So let's get the good doctor on here. He is a member of Doc Squads. I don't know what that means, but I want to find out. And a former health policy fellow at the Heritage Foundation. So he's been writing about the health care bill since, I think the earliest articles I found were like 2009, and I listed those on the webpage. So if you guys want to read some other things, and there are a couple of YouTube videos as well. Dr. Fodeman, are you in there?
I sure am. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
You bet. Good afternoon. Thanks for being on.
Thanks a million. So what is Doc Squads anyway?
Sure. So Doc Squads is basically an organization founded by Joel Strom, who's out in Beverly Hills, and he's a dentist, actually. And basically his mission of his organization, which I think is really great, is really trying to empower doctors and trying to get doctors more involved as far as really getting the message out about how laws, regulations, the ACA is affecting doctors, affecting their patients, and affecting just the practice of medicine in general. So I think it's a really great, needed organization, and I'm a part of the Arizona chapter, which is where I'm based out of.
Nice. And you had, part of what set off this interview was an article you had in The Hill, and it was titled "Healthcare for Me, but Possibly Not for Thee." And as a former English teacher, I do love the use of "thee" whenever we can, work it in.
I was able to fit it in, so it was about perfect. I try to use it about once every 6 months or so. And yeah. I was doomed. So.
Hence, it will fall into disuse. Well,
from what I've been reading, it may not be for thee.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Sure. So basically the article you're talking about, which was published in The Hill, basically I took, some of you guys might have heard about how President Obama had a sore throat recently, and I basically took the care that he got and kind of contrasted that with the care that your listeners might get under the ACA. Now, President Obama, he had a sore throat, and he went to Walter Reed and had a very thorough workup with, from what we understand, an ENT consult, a fiber optic exam, had a CAT scan, and
wow.
Of course, as the leader of the free world, President Obama, I agree with positive politics, but definitely deserves top-notch medical care, and there's no question about that, but... Well, first off, as a physician, I you know, do my best to provide top-notch medical care to anybody who walks through the door. And unfortunately, due to various provisions of the ACA, which are still getting hashed out, I think there's a lot of ways that that's going to get harder for a physician like me to do for John Q. Payson, unfortunately.
Well, I know my doctor, my personal doctor, who shall remain unnamed, recently had a note on his counter that said he would no longer bill the California exchange insurance, that you'd have to pay up front and then you collect your money.
So my doctor never did take the insurance. He just said no to everything. If you want to come to me, good for you. Well, you bill your own insurance.
You can't blame him.
I don't.
The amount that they're getting paid when they're getting paid is a fraction of what they can survive on. So, you know, if you want a doctor, it looks like in a lot of cases you're going to have to just pay.
Well, and doesn't it limit the types of things you can do for people?
Sure, and there's definitely some parts of the law that could have that impact. And again, the kind of the devil's in the details, so to speak. But those are some of the things that I talk about in this piece in The Hill. And basically, one provision of the law is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. And basically, the mandate of that is to conduct government-sponsored research comparing the efficacy of various surgical and medical interventions. And prima facie, you know, on its face, well, that seems reasonable. That doesn't seem so bad. But again, it kind of depends how that research is ultimately used. And when you have a Medicare system that has 40 some odd trillion dollars in unfunded liabilities and costs are exploding, I think the fear of mine and a fear of other providers out there as well who are really kind of paying attention is that government entities like Medicare and Medicaid that are looking to kind of save money might go out there and use this research to kind of deny care to individuals. And there's several ways that perhaps could be done. One way is they could take this research and for those quote unquote less efficacious treatments, just outright deny coverage for them, say, we're not going to cover those. Or another option, which could perhaps have a similar effect, would be to take those kind of quote-unquote less efficacious treatments and say, we'll pay for them, but we're going to pay physicians less. So that would kind of put physicians in a bind where it would basically dissuade, and depending on what we're talking about, possibly dissuade severely physicians from ordering those tests that their patients need and want. And I think the real kind of fundamental problem with this type of approach to healthcare is this research, it's not based on the individual patient. It's not based on the patient sitting in the exam room. It's not based on you. It's based on the average patient.
Yeah.
And the average patient, unfortunately, can be very, very different from the individual patient. Patients respond differently to different medicines, and that's kind of the art of medicine as opposed to the science. And this type of approach to cutting costs really just ignores that.
Yeah, and that is happening now. I mean,
that's always happened.
There's
to
a lot
an
of things
extent.
That yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that they just won't pay for. So, I mean, my doctor told me, he said it's going to come to a point where I won't be able to treat you anymore because the tests or the treatments that I may recommend for you, they won't pay me for. So, if you want me to treat you, you have to pay for that out of pocket. Otherwise, you're going to be treated by a bureaucrat.
Sure, and that is some of the shift we're seeing with concierge medicine, direct pay models, and I think those type of mediums of care, provide very high quality care that's more patient centered, that patients like, that doctors like. But again, kind of the fear as someone who's really kind of following the policy is that we just have the ACA that established 159 new committees, agencies, programs that it's very likely that as more doctors do go in that direction and as more doctors do opt out of the system, that one of those agency programs or committees is going to say, not so fast, you can't do that, and make it illegal one way or another. And I think that's a very kind of legitimate fear.
Is it? I think I remember that it was not legal in Canada to pay cash for service.
Correct.
You're not allowed to kind of go around the system. You've got to be in it, or you've got to leave the country and go somewhere else.
Sure, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing where a lot of Canadian patients who don't want to wait 4 months for an MRI or 6 months for orthopedic surgery because they're in pain. So they come across the border and they come here. And so basically what that is, it's kind of like a two-tier system where those with money, those with power, those with the resources who have access to other mediums, they can still get that kind of high-quality care, kind of like our president can. But again, John Q. patient, unfortunately, especially those without access, without the money, without the power, without the connections, they're going to basically be stuck in the system. And I think the real kind of shame here, guys, is that, yes, there were problems. I mean, there were costs were exploding, largely due to Medicare and the third-party payer system. But irrespective of that, I mean, costs were exploding. There were 49 million uninsured people in this country, and the efforts definitely needed to be to bring more people into the system. But for the most part, 90% of people or so in this country had health insurance, and 80 to 85% of those rated their coverage as good or excellent. So most people had insurance. Most people had a doctor, and they liked their insurance, and they liked their doctor. And parenthetically speaking, why else would the president spend so much time, so much capital, assuring the American people that they could keep their doctor, that they could keep their insurance? But, of course, as we know, that's just simply not true.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, most people did have insurance. They may not have been happy with the cost. They may not have been happy with the copay. But they had coverage, and it was the best medical treatment in the world. And now they are stuck with the same high cost and less treatment options.
Actually, in a lot of cases, higher costs.
Higher costs.
Because
And I think fewer people are covered.
Yeah.
I think fewer people are afforded.
This law is not controlling costs. I mean, there's no question about it. And costs only as more of the law rolls out. I mean, in my opinion, and this is something that I've written a lot about as well, that, I mean, if there is going to be a bending of the cost curve, so to speak, to use the president's words, it's going to bend it up.
Well, and I've also heard that the folks that previously didn't have insurance, that ran out and got the Obamacare, very few of them actually made their first premium payment and ended up with no coverage in the end anyway. So, I mean,
have you
heard that?
And even as far as that's a great point as well. Even as far as that, according to the government's own estimates, when all is said and done, and you've taken the 90% who had insurance and 80 to 85% who were really happy with what they had and kind of turned everything on its head for them, once you've done that, there's still going to be 31 million people in this country in 2024 without health insurance. So we haven't fixed that problem, but we've basically just kind of made everything topsy-turvy for everybody else.
Oh, yeah. You've made it more expensive. You've made it, I think, fewer people able to afford the coverage. It's worse coverage. there's not a lot of pluses.
The trick is that it's and now it's coming out of the taxpayers, which it really wasn't before except for the emergency room thing. But in policies even like ours, it's more efficient. If you look at I used to do the insurance for another company that I worked for, and to figure out which plan was best for the employees. And so I'd compare all these plans. Well, as we shopped in the Obamacare crossover and looked at all the plans that were available for my office, the smartest thing you could do would be to go to the emergency room. That was the lowest cost that didn't affect your deductible, because our deductibles are all like $3,000 now and our out-of-pockets like $11,000. And your short trip is to the emergency room again, which is where we were before.
Which bypasses most of it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, we have David on the line. He has a question for you.
David?
Go ahead, David.
Oh, morning. Yeah, or noon now.
Yeah.
You know, I heard you talking about health care and, you know, surprise at the idea that this issue of health care has come up in the Obama administration. I'm old enough to remember the beginning of Bill Clinton's term when we were in a dangerous position back then, and it was a massive problem. And it was called Hillary Care back then.
Right.
But all during the 80s, people were dying, and their health care coverage was at a dangerous position. So I take a real exception to the idea that this is something new. But the other angle of it that I'd lean on is that I was interested in going into medicine when I was young. And I studied the economics of it as well as the biology of it. And a healthy, stable economy would only have about 3% of its gross domestic product as health care. But America right now is better than 16%. We've got at least three different epidemics going on right now. We've got a diabetes epidemic. When I was a kid, it might be one person out of 1,000 had diabetes. Now they're talking about one out of two. And the idea that cancer is now getting into one out of two people having cancer, that's a dangerous spot. And the idea that people are laughing because we can sabotage a healthcare system, that's creepy. And I really take exception.
I don't get the part about the laughing. I'm not the doctor, so I'm going to let him respond to everything else. But people are laughing about sabotaging the healthcare system?
Yes, absolutely. The idea of killing, crippling Obamacare, doing what you can do to make sure that it fails. This is sabotage. This is mass murder of America.
Failed.
We've got a cancer epidemic. We've got a diabetes epidemic. We've got a variety of other healthcare problems that are, you know, heart disease. Heart disease in its own range is a massive epidemic and may be directly tied to radiation.
Okay. Hold on 1 second, David.
Sure.
Before we get too far down the road, let's let Dr. Fodeman respond because it's getting bigger. The comments.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Dave. And I mean, I think the real problem here is the law itself is failing, and it's really failing under its own weight. It's too big. It's too complicated. It's too confusing. I mean, as a physician who kind of deals with this stuff on a daily basis, I look at the Affordable Care Act, and I see that this isn't the solution. I mean, this is the problem. There's already too much red tape. There's already too much regulation. There's already too much bureaucracy. And we really need to go in the other direction as far as giving doctors, giving patients more freedom, more flexibility to try to tackle these problems, to make better cost-conscious decisions. And that's really the direction that we need to go in. And again, unfortunately, that isn't the direction the ACA takes us, which is why, in my opinion, things are getting worse under the ACA, and they're only going to get even worse. But hopefully now with the new Senate and the new House and strong Republican leadership, that this is the direction we'll take. Again, I'm not naive enough to think that the president will, you know, who's shunned bipartisanship for 6 years is going to suddenly shift gears. But I would hope that the Republicans can kind of put together some good ideas to try to move things in the right direction, so to speak.
So the idea isn't that we're, you know, that anybody's laughing trying to make healthcare worse. The idea is that, like a lot of things, when you first put them out, if they're not working well, you've got to fix them. And we've identified some stuff.
And the law is making things worse. And I think the real problem, again, was how this law was created. Again, President Obama, once he came into office, he ran on a campaign of bipartisanship and working together and bringing people together. But then what's the first thing he did? He made that conference and waved his finger at Speaker Boehner and said that, or John Boehner, and said that I won. and, you know, proceeded to kind of just go in his own direction. And I think that's the real problem here, is there are a lot of good ideas on healthcare in the right, and they're much simpler. It doesn't take 2,900 pages. It doesn't take 159 committees, agencies. It doesn't take a team of consultants, a team of navigators, a billion-dollar website that doesn't work. I mean, what the heck does any of this stuff even have to do with healthcare? And that's the real problem here, because, again, this law was never about healthcare. It was never about bending costs. It was never about proving quality. It was just taking something that, again, wasn't the ideal market, by no means a free market, but taking more of that and shifting it to the federal government. And that's really the main effect of this law. And surprise, surprise, as far as costs, as far as healthcare, as far as access, it's not helping.
Well, government usually is the least efficient deliverer of most services. We've got to take a really quick break, and we'll be back. Thank our advertisers. Thanks, David, for the call. We're being joined by Dr. Fodeman talking about the healthcare law. If you have questions or comments, 530-605-4567. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
No. I ain't got no time for that.
Classic.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
No, I look at all the music from growing up differently now.
We're going to ruin it for you.
It has different applications. Hey, so you're joining We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM. It's all about healthcare for the next half hour. You can call us at 530-605-4567. So we've got Mike Quinn on the line, who already knew that number. I know Bill wants to ask a question about cancer, but we're going to come back to cancer. We can't leave Mike there forever.
Sure you can. You won't be the first.
Hit it, Mr. Quinn.
Now, the scariest thing about this Obamacare, when you go in and you get your rates and things like that, is that's only an estimate. You do not know how much your annual fee is going to be until they come up to the end of the year, because they base your numbers upon last year's income. If your income goes up, they say, oh, okay, well, your income is too much. They're going to send you another bill.
Get out.
No. No, this is what people are not understanding. If you're complaining about your rates right now, you don't even know what it is. It is an estimate. And if you get your income goes up, they say, oh, well, you should have been paying this last year.
No, I've heard that same thing,
and
Mike.
They can retro-charge you?
People are afraid.
Absolutely retro.
Yeah, if you get a raise, or, you know, you get promoted at work or whatever, you could end up on the losing end of that deal because your health care is going to eat it up and
is
more.
That only if you're on the subsidies?
Yeah.
Yes, if you're on one of the subsidy programs. And and they're not sure about the other programs either, because they're all based upon paying into one system.
Okay, the only thing that's going to save them is that the IRS took some pretty good cuts at the end of the year, so maybe they could save up enough money to pay the penalty. That's brutal.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the thing is, it's going to be a very, very, you're talking about brutal. By the time the IRS gets all the information and calculates it,
yeah,
you may have 2 years worth of back payments to make.
Hmm. Yikes.
Because they can't, as soon as you send your return in, they're not going to know with the whole system whether it made money or not.
Well,
and you would know because you do taxes.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we all want to be fair, so everybody has to pay their share. Hey, thanks a lot, Mike.
I forgot about the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, sorry, Mike.
And then on the provider side with that as well, as far as a lot of the kind of the documentation, as far as which providers are accepting the exchange plans and stuff like that, a lot of that is just kind of flat out wrong as well. So people might sign up for a plan thinking that their doctor or a doctor that they want to go accepts that insurance, when in reality they might not. So it's not just kind of the dollars and cents of it as far as the misinformation, but also as far as the access and the physician as well.
Well, and I guess if we're piling on, Let's also include the most recent information that the stuff you enter in healthcare.gov is actually being sold to other people, and, you know, your information's not secure.
Not
that
it's not secure.
Anyone ever thought it was. Oh, bye, Mr. Quinn. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I appreciate David calling in because he brought up a great point about cancer that I wanted to expand on a little bit. You know, in spite of the billions of dollars that this country spends every year in cancer research, we can't find a cure. And, you know, my personal opinion is there's more money in treatment than there is a cure. But besides that, I speak from personal experience. You know, my father died of cancer, and I have coworkers who are dealing with cancer right now. And what I've seen is if you are not on a government program like Medicare, Medicaid, you can't afford the cure. And they'll tell you right up front, you know, do you have insurance? Do you, you know, how are you going to pay for the treatment? That's the first thing they're going to ask you. If you do have Medicare, or if you want to file with Medicare, the first thing you have to do is get rid of all your personal belongings, which to me is a crime. You work your whole life, and then you end up with cancer, and you got to get rid of everything. So as far as the cancer thing goes, Obamacare is not going to help anybody if you end up with cancer. And what have you heard on that?
Sure. I mean, I agree. I mean, as far as, again, my top, I mean, there's a lot of economic issues and a lot of political issues, but my main concern is the patient, the doctor, and medical practice. And those are kind of my top three. And this law, as far as those things, again, there's some kind of radical restructuring of the country, but on those three things, I mean, this law, it's just, as I write in that article for The Hill, I mean, this law does not benefit patients. It's certainly not good for doctors or for the practice of medicine. And like one of some of the things I talked about the Patient Centers Outcomes Research Institute, declining reimbursement, ICAP, the value-based payment modifier. I mean, there's a lot of provisions in this law that kind of, depending on how they're enacted, could definitely be used to prevent patients from getting the care that they need and getting the care that they want. And again, that's not how this law was sold to the American people, but that's the only really way that this law could even come remotely close to controlling healthcare costs in any sort of way.
Well, in the past, did they have to be on Medicare in order to get cancer treatment if they were older? Did they have to get rid of everything and qualify for Medicare? Is that the same or is that new? Do you know?
So in Medicaid, for example, if you have Medicaid and you have a little bit of resources, the federal government can actually come after you as far as kind of going after any sort of assets you have if you had used, or even after your beneficiaries, if money is spent. And for example, for this, that's becoming much more of an issue now, where we're seeing a huge Medicaid expansion with 15, 20 million new people placed on Medicaid and up to 138% of FTL. So that's becoming definitely more of an issue under the ACA with its Medicaid expansion.
One of our listeners in the chat mentioned that as of January 1st, 2015, if you're getting a subsidy through Obamacare, you'll be paying tax on that as income. Have you heard that?
That I actually was not aware of. But, yeah, again, it's just a really...
Kind of makes sense,
and again, and that's the real problem here. I mean, we're talking about subsidies. We're talking about assets. I mean, we're supposed to be talking about health care. We're supposed to be talking
exactly.
about patients getting the care that they need. We're supposed to talk about improving access. And, I mean, the best really way to do that... I mean, the problem here is that since Medicare, for the past 50, 60 years, basically what we've been trying to do is that we've tried to be basically ramming a square through a circular hole. And it's just not working with a Medicare, a Medicaid system based on price controls, where you have a product like healthcare that is so heavily regulated that physicians such as myself that every day see dozens and dozens of ways that I could perhaps do my job better, how I could provide better care, how I could provide more care to more patients, how I could be happier doing what I do, how I can make life easier for my patients. Every day I see dozens and dozens of ways that that could be. But unfortunately, the industry, the product is so heavily regulated that that's just not feasible. And this only regulates it further, making that type of innovation that we need to bend the cost curve even harder. And then at the same time, it's also fueling consolidation, which is only leading to higher prices and also, again, making it harder for the physician to really innovate. And those are the type of things we need to tackle. We need to try to find common sense deregulation areas where we can give physicians a little more control to try to do their jobs a little better. And then at the same time, we need to try to empower patients to give them a little more skin in the game. And that's really kind of what's lacking. And there's several ways to do that. I mean, first off, you should be able to pick a healthcare plan that best meets your needs. So if you're a citizen here in Arizona, but you see a plan in California that has all the packages that you need, all the mandates that you need, but nothing that you don't, and it's a little cheaper, well, you should be able, as a citizen of Arizona, to go out and buy that plan in California, especially if it's cheaper. Then, at the same time, of course, the ACA does, you know, just the opposite by with its essential health benefits, but then at the same time, we also need to do things like extend health savings accounts, for example, to make consumers smarter, more cost-conscious of how they're spending their healthcare dollars at the point of consumption. I mean, for any other thing, whether it's buying gas or buying a gallon of milk.
Yeah, but see, that's where it all goes south, because everything else is free market. You don't have a choice with this. There is no free market here. They're telling you how the game's played, and you have to play it. You can't go out and shop your own like on every other product. And that's, I guess, where I think it really starts to go south.
Well, the other...
Yeah, absolutely. And the only other market really that's like this is education. And the only other market where you see kind of the price increases like you do in healthcare is education. I mean, they're very, very similar. And it's true. I mean, I'm a reasonable guy, and it's true the idea of a market in healthcare can never be totally perfect. I mean, if you're having, you know, substernal chest pain, that sucks all of a sudden. I mean, the idea that you would kind of make the call, you know, 7 local cath labs, see who has the cheapest cath lab, and go to that hospital. I mean, that's ridiculous. But that's kind of the exception, not the norm. A lot of these things we're talking about with, like, colonoscopies, like back MRIs, with just kind of more routine outpatient stuff. I mean, there was a recent study actually published in JAMA, about price variation just in the state of California on laboratory tests. So laboratory tests are a very objective thing. It's not like a colonoscopy, which you could argue maybe there's some skill set involved and some complexity and some difficulty, just a lab test, and the results were shocking. They found that these very common lab tests that, as a doctor, I order routine daily, multiple times daily, like a BMP, which is a basic metabolic panel, or a lipid, that the prices ranged from like $30 to $10,000. I mean, just astronomical price differences. So if you could create a system with price transparency where consumers know how much it costs, and then a situation where maybe through a health savings account where consumers have a little incentive to not go to the one where it costs $10,000 and drive the extra mile to the one where it costs $100. I mean, you're talking about real savings here that could really save a lot of money, and that's the direction that I think we need to go in. And these aren't complex. These aren't 2,900-page bills. These aren't new committees, new agencies, programs. I mean, these are really just kind of tweaking the largely successful system that we had and trying to build on its success and make it a little better so we do lower costs and more people can afford and we can afford to bring more into the system.
Right. And you can't do your job without those tests. I mean, you could guess, but I mean.
Not really, because we haven't.
Yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't be doing that without tort reform.
I was just going to say that.
Another thing.
We skipped tort reform.
But if they're not going to pay for the tests.
I know. What are the choices? I mean, hold on. We've got to take a break and then we'll come back because tort reform was on my list. That was my next thing. Because I'm thinking about that. You know, as you guys have to try to work around this, you wind up dancing right into the, you know,
courtroom.
The storm with tort reform. Okay. Really quick break. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, here at KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.
Classic
doctor song on there. All right, so we've got roughly 10 minutes. What about the tort reform? Is any of that coming your way?
I mean, it's definitely something that we need. I mean, if someone, again, and this is really not a today conversation, I mean, this would be a 6 years ago conversation, but if the president was really serious about trying to bend the cost curve, about trying to make our healthcare system a little more patient-centered, a little better, a little cheaper. I mean, there's really two things that I think you could have done that would have produced substantial savings and really been a great first step in the right direction, and that would have been buying insurance across state lines and then tort reform. And tort reform is really something that we need to talk about because it's something that it's really needed. First off is just the price of rising malpractice premiums, but then the real impact where tort reform does have an effect and where it could save money is the practice of defensive medicine. And basically what defensive medicine is, it's kind of ordering extra tests, extra consults, extra procedures that your patient really may not need. But a physician does it not out of, say, medical necessity, but they do it really to protect themselves from the possibility of a lawsuit in the future. And it's something that, as a doctor, it's something that I do, all us physicians do on a regular basis. And, I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars, and it's something, there's been estimates, you know, 50, 100, 200, it's the type of thing that no one really knows for sure, and it's the type of thing that would definitely, it's really a cultural thing, it's the type of thing that would take a lot to change, but it is something that tort reform could have an effect on, and I think it would save money, and then at the same time would also make our healthcare system just a lot better, because a lot of these extra tests, extra procedures, extra interventions, they don't just have a cost. But they all have
benefit.
They all have side effects, and
sure.
They all a lot of times they can lead to other tests. So you can get a CAT scan with contrast, and you can get kidney damage. You can get a CAT scan for one thing and it doesn't show what you thought it would show or what you did it, but then you pick up a little nodule in the lung or in the liver, and now you're getting an MRI, or now you're getting, you know, another set of CAT scans for the next 2 years to look at that lung nodule. So there's a lot of unintended consequences, and another unintended consequences of the unnecessary test is the opportunity cost of it taking away resources from those who actually need it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so now, what about preventative type medicine, though? Is it covered? I mean, do they pay for the preventative?
But he's talking defensive. So basically, yeah, you're defending yourself
with
suits.
They're a little different. So this isn't preventative medicine, which is trying to get diseases early, which most insurances do cover. This is defensive medicine, where a doctor is ordering a test, not really a test that's medically indicated, but a test really more just because of our litigious system, and a doctor doesn't want to get sued. And again, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that if there was some way we can kind of curb this culture, which tort reform could potentially do. Unfortunately, again, there's no tort reform in the ACA except for a few demonstration projects. But, you know, we know this is something that's needed, and we know that's something that works. But unfortunately, physicians aren't as powerful and as connected as those trial lawyers.
Yeah, that's a pretty big lobby you're up
against.
Yeah,
and the medical, the big medical lobby that just AMA. Basically AMA sold you guys down the river.
That's absolutely. Well, I mean, I wouldn't even consider the AMA a doctor's organization or
right.
a doctor's lobby.
Saying.
I mean, they get only about 14% of practicing physicians actually belong to the AMA. I of course are not, and they get most of their money from the, they have some of the rights to the CPT codes, which is like the billing thing. So they're basically really a government funded monopoly, and that's where they get their money from. And that was unfortunately really their priority in the healthcare debate, and it wasn't the patient, and it certainly wasn't doctors.
Well, how, now that this thing has been around for a few years, how is this affecting guys that you know that are in practice, ladies, I guess, doctors in general? Are you seeing people leave like we thought would happen? Because we're seeing that here.
Sure. I mean, as far as affecting physicians really on a microeconomic level, I mean, you have to remember that a lot of the law really hasn't even been written yet with its secretary shells and its committees and its agencies. So as far as how it's affecting me on a daily basis, I mean, there definitely is more, it has created more paperwork in certain respects, but it really hasn't been too big of an effect. I mean, one way it did affect me is obviously I'm a very kind of free market and very autonomous and very independent young physician, and I would much rather be a private practice doctor. I would much rather be doing like the concierge medical practice or a direct pay or something like that, as opposed to an employed model physician. And while I would definitely prefer the former, I just deal with a lot of uncertainty surrounding the ACA, and you know, who knows what's going to happen as far as the future of private practice and the future of direct pay models. So, you know, so that had some impact on me as far as the job that I took. So in that respect, it definitely did have effect, because I think that's definitely kind of risky. But there definitely are, I mean, older doctors who are nearing retirement, kind of close to retirement, and not just the ACA, but with the electronic health record kind of being shoved down our throat, with the stimulus law and then ICD-10 on the horizon, which is the new billing and coding software, which is basically takes the number of codes from, you guys might have heard about this, basically takes the number of billing codes from about 18,000 to, I think it's 164,000, with Jeez. Codes for struck by duck, bit by duck.
Hit by a flaming duck on water skis. Yeah, we heard some.
it would be funny if it wasn't true.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true.
You can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's just absurd. But so with all those kind of three things, yes, a lot of older doctors are definitely nearing retirement, and my guess is that there's probably a lot of younger people, maybe 5-10 years younger than myself, who looking at medicine and would have normally might have gone to that, but now they're gonna be a nurse or a nurse practitioner or a PA or get an MBA or something like that. So it definitely is having an effect, and as more of the perverse incentives get ingrained in our system, there's only going to be more.
More surprises, not less. So, so do you think, we've got like a minute left, but I just was kind of curious, would you be more in favor of peeling away pieces of it and replacing it with things that work, or getting rid of the whole thing and starting over, if it was your magic wand to wave?
Sure. Well, again, I don't think the president is going to be too amenable to either with everything.
No, it's a magic wand, not a realistic
wand. Showed us in the past 6 years. But, I mean, again, if I had my way, and again, I don't really think we can start over at this point either, because unfortunately, you know, people have made decisions based on the law and what they think it's going to affect, and it's affecting the future of hospital operations, and people are making decisions based on this law that will be very hard to kind of overturn. So I don't necessarily think it could be. If it could, I mean, my preference, and I think the best thing, would be to definitely start over and kind of start with the direction that I talked about, and kind
of get rid of all the 159 different.
I think if insurance companies had the ability to write private policies again, I think it would squeeze it out slowly and it'd go away.
Dr. Jason Fodeman, thank you for spending an hour with us. We'd love to have you back, and we could talk about other pieces and parts. So you know how to find us. Let us know when you've got other articles out, and we'd love to have you on.
Thank you very much.
I have a real pleasure to be here, and I'll definitely take you up on that. I'd love to be back on the show.
Yep. We love to have experts on so we can find out what they know. We'll be back in 5 minutes after the news, and we're going to pick up with Patrick Wood where we left off last week on Technocracy. Don't miss it. We're back. You're joining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. The chat room's kind of quiet this morning. It's sunny out. Everybody's doing stuff. Bill's singing. That's, of course, going to ruin everything.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
I lost my mind.
So, first hour, we talked about healthcare. For those of you who missed it, we'll have the archive up by about 2:30. Bob usually has it all prepared and ready to go. So, you can listen to that after the fact. This hour, we are revisiting Technocracy Rising with Patrick Wood.
Fantastic book.
Because we ran out of time last week, basically, and we didn't get to the part about what we could do, and we skipped a few sections of the book. But the book was so awesome that I gave my book away. so now I don't have a book. I ordered a new book. Not here yet. So, Mr. Wood, it's all you. Take us where you'd like to go.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, where do we go?
No pressure.
I like the sound of you're giving your book away. That's true dedication for sure.
Well, I gave it to our congressman. I'm like, if you can read through all the highlighter, you know, just feel free to add your own notes.
Maybe with the folks that didn't listen last week, we could do a real quick recap. I know that's kind of a tough deal on something this complicated, but maybe a little bit of a recap on what technocracy is.
Oh, yeah. I guess we should do that.
Yeah, I know. I need that 2-minute elevator speech, but it's the problem is the building's about 500 stories high.
but you know what? Honestly, I think that the 2-minute elevator speech has to be something to the effect that all the people who think that our freedoms are slipping away and that our ways to fix it seem to be inadequate, and you can't figure out why the world has lost its mind. What's going on with the anti-religion thing? What's going on with our elected officials don't seem to have the power that they need to have to fix some of this? And how did the environmental movement start running the world? And are we really going to get rid of money and have stupid energy currency? And why do we all have to have tiny cars and live in a rabbit hutch?
I know. I will say first, the day that science met sociology was a dark day in history. And that's exactly what happened in the early 1900s. And, you know, I would like to frame today's dilemma like this. All these years that we have been fighting the surface wars, if you will, like liberals versus conservatives and Democrats versus Republicans and, you know, the Greens versus somebody else, and, you know, all these battles, these political battles that have been going on all these years, basically have been for naught. because, and the fruit of that is we're worse off today than we've ever been in the past. So that's a bad trend, very bad trend. What's happened in the meantime is that there has been a politically active submarine movement where the, you know, the nuclear equipped submarine has been traveling under the water unseen, unfelt, mm-hmm. and unobserved. And this represents this movement called technocracy. These are the scientists and engineers who have created, in essence, a new scientific-based religion where the scientists and engineers that are participating in this are the priesthood. They go to the oracle of science, let's say, for instance, global warming. They go to the oracle of science, and they come back as the priest dressed in, you know, engineering garb to tell us peons what the oracle said. And furthermore, what we must do about it. So if the oracle comes back and says, you've all been, you know, the oracle says, you've all been bad. You've all been selfish. You've consumed too much carbon and you're destroying the planet. Shame on you, the oracle says. What you need to do is you need to sacrifice your firstborn into the volcano. Next Tuesday at 10, or we're all going to die. I'm sorry to right. use kind of an absurd example.
It's not absurd.
But this is the kind, this is the kind of nonsense that's been fed to us by people like Al Gore, for instance, who says the oceans are going to rise and we're all going to die.
Yep.
And now it's, you know, global warming has kind of gone away and it's called climate change because they, you know, they're too embarrassed by warming. So, you know, this whole world of pseudoscience that's upon us is brought to us by this technocratic underground or underwater submarine. Every once in a while, it pokes its little scope up out of the water. It's barely visible. Checks out the, you know, what's going on up above. And then goes down to do more damage. We see technocracy around us in the form of sustainable development. Agenda 21, which was brought to us by the same people, members of the Trilateral Commission, by the way. We see it in the green economy. We see it in smart growth. We see it in councils of government, which we did not get to talk about last time, but that also is a product of reinventing government. It's all around us. And you have to ask the question, how did it get here? I was talking with my brother-in-law today briefly, and I asked him if he read the Earth Charter in the back of the book, and he said, because he finished the book, he said, well, I didn't read it word for word. I said, well, you need to go back and read it word for word. Because the Earth Charter was penned by Stephen Rockefeller. It is the constitution for the new religion, if you will, that's going to support sustainable development. And I asked him the question, I said, how is it that every school in America celebrates Earth Day? Really? Where they trot out this, you know, this document, the Earth Charter, and fill the poor little students' brains full of garbage. A brilliant strategy, you have to say. How did they get from A to B and spread this all over our country? And indeed, it's all over the world. The whole world celebrates Earth Day today, and the whole world is celebrating Earth's Charter. This stuff has been done and brought in right under our nose. Nobody's paid attention. Nobody's considered the source, if you will. Yet, here it is. It's all around us. Now, we feel the oxygen being depleted from our throat as the rope tightens around our neck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that a bad summary?
Well,
I think everybody has seen it coming.
but seeing it coming and doing something about it, I mean, I think they kind of thumbed their nose at it and thought it was, you know, no big deal. And let's face it, some of the technological advances have been pretty amazing. I mean, we have the internet and, gee, look at all we do on the internet now. And, you know, that's fantastic. But, what's it really all about? You know, and I think that's what you're bringing up in Technocracy Rising is what the real agenda is.
Yes, and there are lots of surprises, I think. As I came along, I realized that this is not a political issue at all. No. It's an economic issue.
Exactly.
And the only reason it's a political issue is that it just happens to spill over because that's part of society.
Well, that's how they can get mandated is through the political systems.
Right.
Well, it's
they use the political system to bring the economic system upon us.
Sure, and it's all based on At the end of the day, it's all control. Whether you want to call it socialism, Marxism, you know, pick a name.
It is totalitarianism.
It's all about control.
Yes. Yes. It's very totalitarian. It is not, it doesn't have the same hallmarks as the other isms that we are familiar with, like Marxism and communism and socialism. Brzezinski, by the way, who kind of started this whole thing with his book Between Two Ages in 1970, Brzezinski has been accused of being a Marxist and a communist for years, and he's not. I went back and read his book again. I'll tell you what, there's a bad rap. The man is not a communist, never has been a communist. What he said about communism is that it was merely a stepping stone to yet another system that he called his technotronic era. That's all he said. He said it's a stepping stone. So for that reason, he was seen as embracing communism or Marxism as a necessary step. And he did, but he was not a communist. He figured that was just a stepping stone to get to where we finally want to go. And that's where we want to go. He was a technocrat. And he was preaching technocracy from day one.
and just so that people aren't confused, technocracy isn't necessarily, it is now, but it isn't necessarily technology because it really predated technology.
Exactly. It did. And we should be careful not to condemn all engineers and scientists because we are not. It's a very small minority. At this point, I'm convinced anyway. It's a very small minority of engineers and scientists who are actually participating in this technocracy nonsense. Most of them, those especially who are in the hard sciences, who refuse to be swayed from the truth of their hard science, they reject this kind of thinking altogether. They would reject that science is the only way to control society. So, you know, hats off to those engineers and scientists who have not participated in this. On the other hand, you know, shields up for those scientists and engineers who are pursuing this, who think that they're God's gift to mankind, so to speak. They think they are gods themselves. But, you know, they figure that they and they alone know how to run society, and we better do what they say. And I'm sorry. The American people never bargained for this. If, as, and when they ever get it in their head what these people are doing to us, they will rise up en masse and put a stop to it. But the question is if. will they see it?
If. Well, we've become so dependent on so much of this, we don't even realize how much we depend on a lot of these scientific breakthroughs on a day-to-day basis. That, if it just all shut down tomorrow, we'd be in a world of hurt.
But see, it isn't even the technology. It's the things like Endangered Species Act. I mean, how many times are you hearing that, oh, my gosh, you know, we're losing all these species. What about all the ones we're finding?
You know, well, that
like,
too.
Well, like, we've lost those? Species since before we could.
They love Darwin, but they hate the they hate his research.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got like take computer database, for instance. I have a computer and I program databases over the years, many of them, and I have a database myself right now that has some data in it. I think that's great stuff. There's great technology out there. And I have nothing against software, you know, written by intelligent people to do things. But what I do object is when somebody like the NSA decides to take the best leading computer technology in the world, database technology, and collect data on every man, woman, and child in this country to the extent of just, you know, data explosion. That is a bad, evil use of technology. I use the same technology for good. They use the same technology for evil.
Mm-hmm.
This technology is not bad. It's the people who use it wrongly that's bad. So, you know, it's a difficult animal to get a hold of. But what these technocrats are trying to do, they are bought into the religion of scientism, and which has all the downwind of that is that Mother Earth is dying and that the humans on the Earth are a nuisance and they're depleting the resources of the Earth where we will all suffocate to death if we don't do something quickly. This is a false religion. I'm sorry. It's not true.
It's ridiculous.
It's just flat out not true. So there we are.
Well, I kind of relate it to, you know, an anthill. You know, we're all basically just a bunch of ants on this planet, and yeah, we can affect our immediate environment, you know, around our particular anthill, but on a global scale, that ant farm's not really going to shut down the planet. It just can't. It's too big. It's there's too many moving parts.
And even if it was, who do you want to be in charge of fixing it? Do you want a bunch of unelected little marching technocrats? And, we've got to look at how we beat him the first time. I was talking to Patrick after last week's show, and I said, well, how did we beat him before? And he said it was the uniforms. They all got gray uniforms, and people freaked out. They thought they were like the Nazis.
Little brown shirts.
Yeah, the little brown shirts. All right, we've got to take a really quick break on that happy note, and we'll be right back.
What's your shirt?
You get my
Everybody
shirt.
Change your outfits. We'll come back, and we're going to talk about how we beat them this time, because that's really important. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Give us a call if you'd like, 530-605-4567. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe they'll never
their theme song
to what you have to say.
Keep tuned into Technocracy, 1460 AM. This would be their theme song. They're going to change everything, teach us dummies how to do it, because they're the experts. I found a, Patrick, I'll send it to you. You could use it. It's one of those Hello, My Name Is name tags. And it says, Hello, My Name Is, and it says, The Expert. That's all classic. I want to wear that to another meeting. I am the expert. Hey, so before we get run out of time, because that's what always happens, you had a really good idea when we were chatting last Sunday afternoon, and you were talking about maybe 4 or 5 weeks from now have the people who have actually read the book come on and have a discussion. You want to pitch that?
Indeed. I think it's, yeah, not just because I thought about it. I think it's just a great idea, period.
No, I think it's a great idea.
If there were enough people in your listening audience, which I expect there might be, who have actually read the book or would get the book and read it between now and then, that the rule of engagement for calling into the show for a master strategy discussion would be that you have read the book all the way through and you're on your honor to do it. And not fake it, calling, well, I read the book and I've got, the, you know, and then he makes some dumb comment or something. We know you didn't read the book.
And then we'll make fun of you.
We know you didn't read it.
Excuse me, all you technocrats out here are listening to the show, you false plants. Don't bother to call into a show like this because you'd be screened out faster than, you know,
well,
you can
no.
blink an eye. So that was a challenge. And I think it would be a fantastic show if you could have callers that were a little bit hot under the collar, which I think they would be after they read this book, to call in and put their two cents in, weigh in.
Well, they would also have the book in their hand, so we could ask them, what is the first word on page 83? So if you don't have it, you are gone.
I don't think
exactly.
I don't know that I would go that far.
This is the kind of discussion that America needs to have.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, do we need to get this into the public domain.
Well, there are tons of – that was the thing I was talking to people about last week. I got so many different calls on different things, and people were worked up about one thing and another. And I said, you know, the one book that I've read in the last 6 years that actually explains all of that and gives you an actual picture of where we're headed in the future, and it's not good and it isn't where you think, is this Technocracy Rising book. I keep telling people, go get the book. I know most people, a lot of people, they count on listening to programs, they count on, you know, other means, But this book is a quick read, and it's something that'll make a lot of sense. If you think the New World Order is real, you haven't looked at it this way. It's a different kind of New World Order. What is it? A new international economic order, right?
That's what the Trilateral Commission originally said.
Yeah. And the economic order, the other parts of it that are amazing are the fact that they want to replace our money with some other form like energy credits. Well, hello. What about the stupid carbon credits, the cap and trade, all that? This is a century old, and I think people don't realize that. They think maybe Obama did it because they just woke up in the last 5 or 6 years, like me.
Yeah, but like he has a brain.
But the more you look, the more you realize these aren't new ideas. Al Gore didn't come up with energy credits. This was a long time ago.
Oh, I think that was one point that I was kind of amazed at, because I thought Al Gore did come up with that whole idea. I thought, man, this guy's brilliant. He came up with an idea and actually got it implemented and made a boatload of money on it. It wasn't a new idea. I mean, it was an old idea.
It was. You know, just an observation about the Trilateral Commission, which I've studied for almost 40 years. They never came up with an original idea in their life, as far as I can tell. They did hijack or plagiarize, if you will, not actual word-for-word text, but in some cases they did. But they basically plagiarized and grabbed ideas from all over the place that they thought were cool and used them for their own advantage. But as a group, I have not found a lot of originality with virtually anything that they said or done.
Well, one thing I thought was really interesting last week was, you had talked a little bit about Operation Paperclip in your book.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that information, for me anyway, was pretty stunning. And not 2 days later on a major national
coast-to-coast
radio show at night, they had a gal on there that wrote a book that was solely on Operation Paperclip. And it was much of the same information that we had shared with the folks about what you had written in your book. And it was like, wow, maybe this is going to get out. Maybe people are going to start realizing that this isn't a new idea. And its roots are pretty darn scary.
Yes, I would hope that one day I might have a conversation with that author and relate to her the information about technocracy, because as far as I can tell, she didn't have a great awareness when she was writing Operation Paperclip. But it was immediately obvious to me as I read it, and there was another book out on it earlier as well. So there's two main books out on Operation Paperclip now that's been declassified. My feeling of it was that there was a great reunion of American technocrats along with German technocrats when they all came back under Operation Paperclip to take positions in the government, mostly in the military, some in the scientific institutions, and they got off scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
But here they were just, again, they were under the surface of the water. They really didn't care who was in charge of the political system. They had their work to do, you see.
Right, right.
They had their business to do, and they didn't care who was sitting on top of it that the people were looking at.
Well, and if people want to see, and this is an example that I don't think you have to be a huge student of history. You just have to be a little bit older than 20. You look at who was in the movement in the 60s, the people that were all part of that, the Eric Holders, the Hillary Clintons, all those folks, the, who's the bomber, you know, what's his face, that idiot Ayers. All those folks that were involved in the 60s, and you look at how they have infiltrated our government step by step. And our education system has absolutely been taken over by folks like that.
Yes. Oh, it's been a long time. It's been a long
time. So now give it multi-generations and then bring in some guys from that should have been tried at the Nuremberg hearings, and you have the whole picture. And seriously, if people are not just like racing to order the book right now, then I think they're blowing it. We do lots of books on this show, and I like them all. And the authors all have great points. But honestly, if I had to say one book in the last 4 years that we've covered that people, it's a must read, it's this particular book. And I've actually never said that because I didn't want to offend anybody, but I kind of don't care because this, well, okay, I never care. But no, I really didn't. I don't want to offend, you know, hey, your book's better than the other guy's book.
She cares.
But this book is super important because if people don't, I don't think they're going to get the gray uniforms again. That's what I'm worried about. We're not going to see them for the creepy goose steppers that they are as they enslave us. We're not going to see it. And people have a hard time understanding. They have a hard time understanding how this can ensnare us and how actually it explains exactly what's going on right now. It isn't just an Obama thing.
Yes, and I should say that the what we talk about Nazi Germany and technocrats, that's not to say that technocrats were Nazis, because they really weren't.
No, but they were.
They were enablers of Nazism, but they didn't care what political system was in place. They're that amoral about it. They can live in a dictatorship as well as in a democracy or a republic. They don't care.
And for those people that don't care about politics, so let's hit those guys. They don't care about politics. They don't follow it. They think it's whatever. Hey, do you care about religion? Do you care about freedom of religion? Because that's part of this, too. Give them the elevator speech on that part.
Well, do you care about your kids' education?
Oh, wait, we can't give them the elevator speech because we're supposed to take a break. Are we supposed to do that right now? We got out of whack before, and we had all the breaks at the end. We're going to take a quick little 2-minute, and when we come back, we'll explain why Christianity has to get rubbed out and why that all seems to be so topsy-turvy. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. If you want to give us a call, it's 530-605-4567, KCNR 1460 AM.
I don't think there's anybody that's analog anymore.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I know a couple people. Okay, so we were going to talk about why they're erasing religion. Can you do that in like 5 seconds, and then we'll pick up a couple of these calls we have on hold?
The religion, that is?
Yeah. Why do they want to get rid of that? Or why do they have to get rid of it?
Yeah, they're not getting rid of it. They're just reforming religion. All of the major denominations of the world now have turned completely green. They've totally bought into sustainable development. They've totally bought into the green economy, social justice. You know, all those kinds of things. You know, take care of Mother Earth, folks, because we won't have her long. And reduce your carbon footprint. You know, you're taking up too much resources, that sort of thing. And they're all chasing after it like lock, stock, and barrel. If somebody doesn't believe that, just go to the World Council of Churches, go to the Episcopalian Church, go to the Presbyterian Church, go to the Catholic Church. In fact, the Pope in June is going to release an encyclical on climate change. In other words, that's going to be an official Catholic doctrine.
Oh boy!
By the time he's done with it, So what if there's 15 Catholics that don't believe him? There's going to be millions of people who just immediately do homage. Well, the Pope said it. It's an encyclical, isn't it? Well, I guess we better believe it. Oh,
brutal!
It's really, sweeping the religious world.
All right, we have Jack on hold. Jack, you're up there in Crescent Mills. Hi. Is Jack not in Crescent Mills anymore? Oh, there we go. Maybe he is now.
There we go. Jack, you there?
Hey, Jack, fire away.
Yeah.
But turn your radio down just a little bit because we got a little delay there going on.
Yeah, I just turned it down.
Hey, thanks.
Pardon me?
I said thanks.
Oh, okay.
Fire away.
Yeah, my question to Mr. Wood is, since the founding of this country, we had a constitutional law, and then 1871, we created two constitutions, the corporate constitution and our organic, and then we moved to 1930s, and the law was changed from constitutional common law to Admiralty Maritime Law. As these technocrats using the system to work their way through the political system, even though they say they don't care, but are they using the same systems?
They're using the system to destroy the system itself. And I'm glad that you brought up the legal issue, because that was on our points to cover before the show was over. There is a new theory of law that's been invented by these people who are following after sustainable development, and it's called reflexive law. Any lawyers in this listening audience need to immediately go to Google and Google reflexive law and start finding out what this is, because this is why we've been losing so many cases, especially environmental cases, over the last 30 years, is because of this reflexive law being practiced. One prominent law journal, in I think it was 2002, wrote and you have to get my book, by the way, and read the chapter on reflexive law. Read the whole thing, but you'll get to reflexive law. This is what this law journal said exactly. Quote, sustainable development's broad sweep strains our intellectual grasp of its meaning and outruns the capacity of our current legal and political systems to channel society's activities toward its achievements. There is no doubt that sustainable development needs new paradigms to transform it from visionary rhetoric to a viable political goal. This is the heartbeat of reflexive law. It has nothing to do with what we understand as the rule of law, where everybody has to, you know, do the same thing or apply, you know, the law applies to them the same way equally. Reflexive law is a completely new antithetical theory of law that's being used, and whether on purpose or not, is overturning our system of rule of law that we have today. And that's, I'll tell you what, that is why the legal system in America is upside down today. People can't get justice. They go up against these regulations. They go up against these crazy land use policies and stuff. And they just can't get justice in court because these idiots are practicing reflexive law, and the lawyers that are defending these poor people don't have a clue what's happening to them because they don't know how the game is being played.
Well, there's no truer statement made. I mean, look at our attorney general. That's exactly what they're doing right now.
Yeah, it's kind of like they look right at law and they go, oh, no, we're going to make it be this.
No. And that's what it is now, so too bad.
Yes.
So, wow. In other words, they're violating everything that's been written down, and they're changing it through propaganda, basically.
because they
can. Converting people into this phony environmental movement, which is destructive to everybody.
It is. It lets the legal practitioner become the judge, jury, and executioner at the same time. It's a very dangerous way to do law. But in the end of it, regulations are used as much as anything to force people to comply. Reflexive law is all about forcing people to comply. That's the whole thing. It's not about, you know, just, well, you broke this law, therefore you get this punishment. That was an easy way to look at law. In this way, they decide what they want you to do, and then they club you to death in court until you agree to do what they say. And they'll use anything they can to do it, including the threat of additional regulation, which is what they've done to any countless number of farmers across this country and ranchers, by the way.
So there's no remedy to it. Then they've created something that nobody can defend themselves against.
That's exactly right. The only remedy is to get rid of the technocrats in the first place. That's, you know, this is what we need to talk about. This is the national discussion that Americans need to have. It's not enough just to get rid of one little element of this, because they'll come back with six more. We, you know, behind our back when we're resting. what we need to do is get rid of the technocrats in the first place, and we'll stop all of these crazy initiatives dead in their tracks, and they won't be there anymore to bring more to us, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, we need to go to the top. We need to stop skirting around the issues on the side, fighting the little battles, little flash wars here and there, and we need to get to the heart of the matter and get after these technocrats directly and run them the heck out of our government and out of our society.
Okay.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is getting people informed to believe this is happening.
Bingo.
Here we are.
Okay, so Jack,
I hope you get a book, and I hope that you're on the air. If we pick a week in the future,
March 1st.
I hope you're on the air calling back in after you've read the book and you've put your two cents in.
Okay. And we picked it. It's March 1st. So on Sunday, March 1st, it will be all the only people who get to call in or communicate actually will be the, I mean, okay, everybody else can listen, of course, but it'll be a focus on folks who have read the book, because honestly, I think the discussion is going to be really lively. Once you kind of get a feel for where this is going, I think you're going to like it. Jack, you're going to love this book. Okay, we've got to take another call. Thanks a million for listening in.
Yeah, you too. Take care. Bye.
Keep track of Crescent Mills for us. It's a pretty place. Okay. Whoops. We've got Ken in Las Vegas. Or maybe not. Did we lose him?
No, I'm here.
Hey, right on.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I got to ask a question on that. I was going to ask about the Pope and stuff, and I need to get what he knows about the background, because it came out of the blue.
Yeah, it did.
This whole question, the cyclical global warming, just out of the blue. There's no pre-indicator. Because the Catholic Church has been the foe of all the isms, you know, Nazism, communism, blah, 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 blah. And now it looks like they've fallen in step with this. And I just was curious if you had any background that could give us a peek.
What do you think, Patrick? Where did it come
from?
Well,
you know, you have to, as far as how the ecumenical movement really got started, except, you know, sucking up all the climate change stuff, you've got to probably lay some of that back at the feet of Stephen Rockefeller. That's David Rockefeller's nephew.
Oh, yeah.
He was Nelson Rockefeller's son. He's been the primary driver, one of the primary drivers of the all faith movement, you know, to bring everybody into the same kind of interfaith.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that wrote the Earth Charter. And if you've never read the Earth Charter, you need to beat a path to the internet and read that and find out, sure, you know, why everybody's celebrating Earth Day all over the world and what the Earth Charter has to do with it. But this has penetrated all the major denominational churches at this point. I don't know one really. There probably is one. I just don't know of one right now that hasn't bought into it, hook, line, and sinker.
Unbelievable. Okay. I'll read the book and be back on March the 1st.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Thanks, Dad.
Okay. Okay. Love you. Bye.
Bye. That's fun. We have relatives listening. But it's really good, because we need people from all around the country. And for our folks that listen, I know we have Suzanne in South Korea that listens, and people everywhere. This is hitting all of us. This isn't a United States thing. This is everybody, right?
You know what, Aaron? This is really odd to me. I said from the beginning I wanted to have overseas distribution just because. But since I released the book on the 1st of January, I've had orders from the most unusual places that you ever heard of. I shipped three books yesterday to Paraguay.
Mm. Wow.
I had two books went to Brazil right off the bat. I had a couple go down to Chile.
That's right, in the heart of global warming country.
Ireland. It was another one that came up. And the United Kingdom and Germany and the Netherlands. Australia has been a big fan so far, because they've been struggling with Agenda 21 for some time. But, you know, all of a sudden, I bet somewhere around 10% of our orders have been international. And that tells me that there are not only other people watching us, but they have these problems in their own country.
Yep.
And they're looking around on the internet trying to find out what the heck is going on.
You better be careful. You'll be on the book ban list.
Yeah, hurry up.
Here we go again. Well,
yeah,
I did it too.
I wonder how.
Hurry and get extra copies
today.
So on March 1st, so we got to make a big pitch on this. You know, March 1st will be all about commentary and observations and things from the people who've read the book. It's fast. What is it, 300 pages or something?
If even.
I mean,
the main book is 270 pages, and there's a little bit more, but I mean, hey, yeah, it's an easy read.
It's a real easy read. Once you pick it up, you won't put it down.
It's a fast read, and all of a sudden you start seeing all the pieces of the puzzle start to fall into place. And then, but it's not just the pieces of the puzzle. The part for me that was so great was the glue in between, little bits of stuff that I didn't know, and the historical stuff that has been taken out. A lot of that historical stuff's been buried. The other part.
Eugenics
in the state of California. You know, for people who think California's gone crazy, I read about that, you know.
Well, they went crazy a long time ago.
God, they just never came back. But the technocrats, they're, I forget the number, but there were the largest number of chapters of Technocracy Inc. were in California. And that was back in the 1930s?
Yes.
Since I don't have my book in front of me, I got to remember.
It was in the 1930s. I have a picture. I think I posted it on Facebook not too long ago. But I have a picture of the Hollywood Bowl filled to the brim at a major technocracy meeting in Southern California.
Oh.
Now, the Hollywood Bowl is no small deal, you know.
What year was that?
Was it somewhere in the 1930s. The picture wasn't dated, but... You could tell it was technocracy because they had their big banner up front. You know, all the technocrats were standing up there in their little gray uniforms and blue ties and stuff.
Mm. Creepy.
And, yeah, they were passing out literature to the people. It was full, chock full of people. I mean, there must have been thousands of people. I don't know what the capacity is, but
it was part of Southern California.
But you look at it, all those people, if they had children, those folks are here now. I mean,
somebody wrote me an email and said, I'm so glad you wrote this book because, my father, and this person was, you know, father's probably dead now, would have been in his close to 100, but he said, my father was into technocracy. I remember sitting around the dinner table and talking about technocracy when I was a kid.
Creepy.
Oh, really?
So the history on this is amazing, and now they have the technology to go with their ideas because it wasn't about technology necessarily. It was about people who were considered technical experts.
Yeah, they didn't have the technology back then to really implement it like they can today.
Now all of a sudden they've got all the tools they need. We're going to take one last quick break here. And we'll come right back with Patrick Wood. We're talking about technocracy. Please go to the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Order the book so you can be in the discussion on March 1st. You'll love it. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.
Commercial-free zone.
That was a blood pressure break.
Insert your own commercial here.
Yeah.
We just couldn't make them work.
The technocracy police destroyed the Phantom.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52, lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Everything is melting down.
And now I understand the problems you can see. Ooh, ooh, I let your children. Ooh, ooh, what did you tell them?
Video killed the radio star.
Video killed the radio star. We had a little snag there with the commercials. They wouldn't actually turn on. So got a little extra time on whatever that song was. What was that?
The one we went out with was Cars by Gary Numan, and we came in with Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Nice. With no commercials in between. Awesome.
Yeah. That was a music break.
Thanks to all those advertisers.
Yeah.
We'll have to thank you a different way. Telepathically, everybody think about them now. Okay.
Technocracy killed the operating system.
Exactly. So, March 1st, big day. March 1st, make sure you have read Technocracy Rising by then. And we're going to come back with Patrick Wood and all the people who have read the book. And you know what? That is going to be a lively little food fight, because I think people are going to be properly, I don't know.
Well, they'll either be on board or they'll be totally angry and want to fight about it.
Well, I think it's just going to make a lot of sense for people.
I think it will, too.
Yeah, I want to hear from them. Yeah. I want to be just a fly on the wall on that show, and no. I want to hear what people have to say.
Yeah. Okay, so my dad says, Patrick, Aaron, Bill, great show. My hair is on fire.
Oops.
That's an electrical fire.
Really?
It's true, though, because honestly, this really gets me out of my chair. I mean, there are so many things, and it feels super oppressive, and people are like, oh, there's just too much. We're never going to make it. And it's like, no. It's all coming from really one point. It's flooded out. It makes it feel like they've got us encircled, but really it's one idea.
Well, the book does.
They're all working on one premise.
The book does such a great job of first backing it up from a historical standpoint. I mean, this is where it comes from. This is where it's been hiding. And ever since, this is what it's been building up to. It's never gone away. It's just been in the, like you say, it was the submarine that's just been slowly cruising in and deploying. And here we are. We're front lines now.
So if these guys don't get little gray uniforms with, would they have navy blue ties?
They had navy blue ties, green, and they have the little, their logo was a monad symbol. That's the yin-yang symbol.
Yep.
It's a kind of a, you know, an occultic symbol.
And
that balance,
of course it is.
Balance, as in sustainable development,
yep.
Balance.
Ew.
And that was, they had a little lapel pin, and it was on all the literature and stuff, the monad. And They were dedicated to putting everything in balance, and only they and they alone could do it.
And people freaked out when they saw that, and finally
when they finally saw the connection between Nazi Germany and the technocrats, that really is kind of the kiss of death for them. They were actually outlawed for a couple of years in Canada.
Oh, wow.
because of that perceived connection. I don't think it was really an accurate perception on the amount of the side of the people. Because, again, these people were not Nazis, but they would use anything, any political system they could to get their agenda on down the road. So,
well, think about what would happen if that whole Nazi thing would have gone a different direction and had more public acceptance.
Oh, my gosh. It would have been a disaster.
Oh, yeah. It would have been a disaster.
Absolutely. One prominent technocrat back in the 30s called for Roosevelt to install himself as a dictator so he could implement technocracy.
Hmm.
This is in writing. See, he wrote a book right before.
And look at what we've heard.
Obama's going to install himself as a dictator.
Yeah, that we need to change the law to give him at least one more term.
Yeah.
You know, wow. Falls
and
right
I do
in
want
place.
To, I do want to say one more time before we run out of time that John Podesta is the most dangerous man in Washington today. You need to watch that man like a hawk. He's a member of the Trilateral Commission, and he is single-handedly the architect of Obama's climate change policy. He's currently a senior advisor to the president for climate change. He's a technocrat par excellence.
And he is a bad man. Okay, so get on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. March 1, we will be talking about Technocracy with Patrick Wood and all the people who have read the book. So go order it now, whether you get it from Patrick directly at Technocracy Rising or you get it from Amazon or whatever. Get the book.
All right, Patrick.
Bob.
March 1st.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks
a
million.
I'll be there. We're going to have a great time.
It is going to be awesome and scary.
Town Hall.
Technocracy Town Hall without the outfits.
Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it?
That's right.
Thanks, Bob. Awesome week.
Awesome show, Aaron and Bill. Casey and our Shasta ready.